Good morning. We will call the June 7, 2023 Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting to order. Director Slauson, would you like to lead us in the flag salute this morning?
Sure. Everyone, please stand and join me in the pledge to our nation's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ask the board secretary if she would read the suggestions for virtual engagement and to call the order of the board and our legal counsel.
Yes. We will do roll call first. President Pauley.
Here.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Our legal counsel is here. And to note, Director Record is absent. I will go over the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again, and please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking.
Thank you very much. April, do we have anybody who's indicated a need to do public comment on any item not on the agenda this morning?
No, we do not.
Very good. Thank you for that. With that, we'll go on to item 2, which is our executive reports. Start with General Manager Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. There's been a number of activities and items that I wanted to brief the board on since our last meeting from 3 weeks ago. First off, I wanted to share with the board that on May 22nd through the 24th, we had a very successful advocacy trip in Washington, D.C. President Pauley, Dr. Armstrong, myself, Julian Walsh, and Pete Evich from Vanskoyak and Associates. We had the opportunity to meet with our entire congressional representative delegation, including Congressman Calvert, Congressman Issa, Nakano, and Ruiz. Had very fruitful conversations as well with the staff from Senator Feinstein and Senator Padilla's office. We also had the opportunity to meet with the EPA staff, as well as the Bureau of Reclamation and the Army Corps of Engineers, discuss our priorities and our projects, and truly advocate on behalf of our ratepayers for additional funding, essentially to bring back tax revenue from our constituents back to this region for investment. We also had a chance to also discuss our comments and perspective on the proposed EPA's rulemaking process on PFAS. So overall, it was just a very successful trip. I think it went a long way to continue to extend our strong relationship with our congressional representative, and building that relationship is very important for our ratepayers and our communities when legislation comes up, when regulations come up, or when funding opportunities. So I do want to thank President Pauley and Dr. Armstrong for making the time for that important trip. Next, I wanted to mention to the board that as follow-on to that trip and per Dr. Armstrong's input, we did submit a letter to the EPA providing our detailed comments on the proposed PFAS rulemaking process whereby PFAS MCL is being advanced, and also there's a CERCLA process that's being considered for PFAS to designate it as a hazardous material. When we met with the EPA, we shared with them a lot of our perspective in terms of the impact, and frankly, that we are a passive receiver of the contaminant. And ultimately, it's the polluters that should be held accountable. It is, from our perspective, unfair to hold our ratepayers financially responsible for the cleanup of the contaminant. We also shared with them the details of the wide-ranging impacts of regulating PFAS as a CERCLA hazardous substance without any type of exemption for water agencies, including the impacts not only in our wells, but also potentially in our desalination program, as well as down the road, potentially on our recycled water, as well as biosolids from our reclamation plant. So I think they were very engaged in that conversation. So as a result of that meeting, we formulated our comments in a letter and submitted that. And I think they were well received because I did get some comments back from other associations essentially applauding our effort in providing those comments. Next, I wanted to highlight the recent consensus agreement among the lower basin states on the Colorado River. As you may have seen in the news recently, the lower basin states, California, Arizona, Nevada, did reach consensus agreement on reducing their take of the Colorado River supplies by 3 million acre feet between now and 2026. And part of that agreement is to reduce the supply of water from the river by 1.5 million acre feet by the end of next year. Of the 3 million acre feet, our understanding is California will be obligated to reduce 1.6 million acre feet. How that will be shared among the state's Colorado River users, meaning metropolitan, imperial irrigation districts, and others, that is yet still to be determined. A big part of this is the federal funding for the conservation of water off of the river, and specifically the federal government has indicated, and the Bureau of Reclamation has indicated, that they will be funding up to 2.3 million acre feet of the conservation efforts. So we'll see how all that plays out. There's a lot of details yet to be worked out. But we do anticipate that a final agreement will be put forward by the time the Colorado River Water User Association Conference meets in December of this year. We're very pleased with this outcome simply because it avoids protracted litigation associated with the reductions on the river. So we will continue to be involved on this issue via Metropolitan and via our other associations. Next item, I wanted to update the board. As I've mentioned in the past, Metropolitan Water District has advanced their Climate Adaptation Master Plan initiative. And this effort was kicked off in February of this year, and there was a board workshop on May 23rd, which our team attended and participated. Ahead of that board workshop, the Metropolitan team did solicit input from all its member agencies, and again, in coordination with Director Armstrong, we did put forward some thoughtful input into the process, including really an emphasis that we are still a growing region in Riverside. And when Metropolitan looks at long-term water supply strategies, they need to consider growth. But in addition, really an emphasis to focus on Metropolitan's mission, which is to supply water for Southern California. We also did highlight the fact that there's other considerations for Metropolitan when it comes to the foundational terms that they wanted input on: resiliency, reliability, water affordability, and financial sustainability. That's also regulations. We're seeing more stringent regulations. I just mentioned PFAS. That is impacting many of the agency's local supply resources. So there's another board workshop coming up end of this month. And in fact, at the general manager's meeting last week that I attended, we talked in detail about all the member agencies' input. 19 out of the 26 agencies submitted comments. We're one of them. We have another general manager's meeting next week to further understand the path forward on this, but I just wanted to let you know we're very much engaged, and Dr. Armstrong is very much engaged in this process. We did have, as you know, a listening session with our sub-agencies recently to solicit input, including input from Rancho, Elsinore, Lake Hemet, and Nuevo. So we appreciated their thoughtful comments as well. Next item, I wanted to share with the board that we're fully implementing receipt of cyclic storage water from Metropolitan. As you may recall, back in 2019, we had executed an agreement with Metropolitan to receive up to 30,000 acre feet of cyclic water that we can store in our Hemet-San Jacinto groundwater basin. In 2019, we did receive 4,100 acre feet of water. This year, we just, on May 31st, we just executed a letter agreement with Met. Essentially, they provide us the cost offset credit up to $264. And we started receiving in lieu cyclic water as of June 1st. Essentially, we shut down the wells in the Hemet-San Jacinto Valley. We purchased additional treated water. For our operational cost, we calculated $250 offset. Essentially, the water from Met will be discounted by that amount to make us financially whole. So it's a great program. We anticipate that we will, by the end of this calendar year, receive approximately 7,500 acre feet. However, we anticipate that the program may continue well into early next year. So we're pleased that we're one of the few agencies that were able to very quickly react to the water surplus conditions up north, and helping Met not only with this program, but we're also continuing to receive Saboba replenishment water at a rate of about 14 to 15,000 gallons per minute. So we're storing as much water as possible and as much as we can take within our system. Under items of interest to the board, you may have also heard of the recent Supreme Court decision in the case of Sackett versus the EPA. This is a ruling that has been long awaited. It's been a case that's been many years, in fact, decades in the work. We have a particular interest ourselves in it because it involves water of the U.S. And frankly, our concern was that we have several water storage ponds and water replenishment ponds that, by certain interpretations, could be subject to the previous waters of the U.S. Definition. So the recent ruling by the Supreme Court reverses, it was a unanimous ruling by all judges, but it reverses the Ninth Circuit Court decision. And I think it puts limits on what is defined, what is the nexus between waters of the U.S. and tributaries. And I know our legal counsel is ready to provide additional legal interpretation of the recent ruling, but we're definitely very pleased with that decision. And maybe one more final update before I turn it over to Keith. Finally, I just wanted to share with the board that Mr. Jerry Brown, the executive director of the Sites Reservoir Joint Powers Authority, will be here at EMWD's board meeting on July 19th to provide you with details on the proposed Sites Reservoir, their long process of advancing the effort, their funding needs and partnerships, the benefits to the entire state, and of course be able to answer any questions this board may have. I know there's a collective interest in understanding the Sites Reservoir further. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions, and I know our legal counsel is also ready to provide additional details on the Sackett case.
I would like to make a comment just on your report. I think you talked about the D.C. Trip, and I just want to compliment our team and the staff. Put together a very, I think, critical and impressive agenda for that time there, and the meetings with every department. I thought when we left, they were either surprised or learned something more about their own programs and how much Eastern is doing, and how our efforts could also be incorporated into some of their programs and future legislation. So I thought you guys did just a fantastic job, and really to be able to have an agenda that includes dinner or lunch with three of our congressmen in that short period of time is I know we had some peer agencies back there that didn't even have one, and they were like, I think they were texting Phil trying to join us or something. But no, you guys just did a fantastic job.
Thank
and
you.
I think it really emphasizes the importance of not only trying to influence future legislation and also funding opportunities, but just the relationships for that with not just our elected officials, but also with the departments that were back there. You guys did a fantastic job.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong. We really appreciate it. And we do have an exceptional team.
Yeah.
And it was back-to-back meetings, as you saw when we were there, and it takes a lot of pre-planning for those types of events. So, no, really appreciate the feedback, and I will pass that on to the Vance Coig team.
Everything he said, I said. So it was a great trip. But any other questions for Joe before I turn it over to our legal counsel? All right, sir, the floor is yours to enlighten us a little more about the case.
Happy to. This is on, right? You can hear me okay?
Yes.
So the Sackett case. So this concerns the interpretation of the Clean Water Act. As I'm sure you guys know, the Clean Water Act that was adopted back in the 70s, prohibits discharge of any pollutant into navigable waters. Central to that is the idea of which waters they're talking about. And the reason this is important is because the term pollutant is defined very broadly. It not only includes things that we might think of as a pollutant, like volatile organic compounds or perchlorate or something, but also could include things like dirt. And in fact, the Sackett case arose because I think they were trying to fill in some wetlands on their property, the property owners, and using dirt. And that was interpreted by the EPA as a violation of the Clean Water Act. So now the issue here is that this is meant to apply to what's called waters of the United States. That's the waters in question. But there's been tremendous uncertainty and confusion about what waters are actually talked about. And that isn't helped by the fact that I think on three prior occasions, the Supreme Court has gotten the issue and essentially came up with a solution that was not clear to folks. In the absence of getting clear direction, it was up to the executive branch to give direction to the EPA on how to interpret that. And as a result, the interpretation kept flip-flopping from one administration to the next so that it would become very broad. And then 4 years later, all of a sudden, it's narrow again. So the good news here is that all nine justices decided it was time to get some clarity on this. And they adopted a definition that's relatively restrictive compared to where we had been recently with it. So and it's an 89-page decision, but it really comes down to this one piece of direction, I guess, and that is that they found that the Clean Water Act extends only to wetlands that are, as a practical matter, indistinguishable from the waters of the United States. Okay, what does that mean? Well, they gave a two-part test to understand what that means. It means that the party asserting jurisdiction, which would be the EPA or Army Corps of Engineers, has to establish first that the adjacent body of water constitutes waters of the United States, in other words, a relatively permanent body of water connected to traditional interstate navigable waters. So that's the first step. And then the second step is that the wetland has a continuous surface connection with that water, making it difficult to determine where the water ends and the wetland begins. So this is a higher standard, as I mentioned, than previously existed because of this adjacency requirement. So the fact that it's a neighboring body is not enough anymore. It now must be connected through continuous surface connection, which is a hydrology opinion, I suppose. So hopefully that gives us more guidance on that, and we'll have a little bit more certainty when we're giving you legal opinions about whether or not the Clean Water Act applies to areas that we're working on.
I have a question. What effect, if any, does it have on state regulations from U.S. Fish and Wildlife or California Fish and Wildlife? Or
that's all. That's a whole separate kettle of fish and wildlife.
All right, that's a fine legal opinion and a pun at the same time. So
I was afraid you were going to start reading the whole opinion.
It would be a long meeting then.
Could I ask a question? Was there another opinion that was more along a 5-4 split on that, or did I read that wrong?
You're talking about in the past?
Or was a 9-0 opinion, correct?
This was This was an Alito opinion, I think, 9-0. Mm-hmm. There was a previous Supreme Court decision that did not reach a majority. That might be what you're thinking of. There were two different standards that came out of that opinion, which is why we had all this uncertainty.
Yeah, I thought on this one, the justices varied on their rationale.
That's right. I think there were concurrent opinions as well. But I haven't, to be honest with you, I have not delved into all of the details there.
But my understanding, President Pauly, and I'll go back and confirm with Keith, but as part of the same ruling, there was a separate 5-4 split by the court on the nexus test that was mentioned.
I think that's
so there was dissent on the court on what represents that nexus between a navigable waterway and in this case, the wetlands. So that's where the four justices did dissent from the majority.
Okay. No, very good. I thought I'd read something as I was reading the news stories on that. So
I believe I read Kavanaugh sided with three on the left.
Okay. But anyway, I mean, to me, there's clarity so that in the future, I've always been fearful of someone from EPA coming out to our recycled water ponds and saying, you can't do this anymore. So I'm glad we have clarity on that. So thank you, Mr. Legal Counsel. With that, Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
couple of items I'd like to share with you. The first being yesterday, myself, Matt Melendres, and other members of our operations and maintenance group had a meeting with the Saboba tribe, representatives from the Saboba tribe, their director of public works, as well as their director of health and safety, and some other members. This was a meeting as a follow-up to conversations I've been having with Stephen Estrada, their executive officer, which started when we had an incident at our Grant Street, Grant Avenue recharge facility, which is situated pretty much adjacent to the Saboba tribe properties. A couple of members of their tribe who are out riding their quad bikes approached our crew that was working out there and claiming that we were trespassing on tribal lands, and they were pretty aggressive about it. Our crews did the right thing. They just backed away, apologized, said there must be some confusion. They left and reported to me. So I reached out to Stephen Estrada and said, hey, we need to talk about this. You know, this is an important facility. It's been there for a very, very long time. We have to perform regular maintenance activities in making sure that operates well. It's a valuable facility, not only for Easton, but for Saboba, because it recharges the groundwater there. And he wholeheartedly agreed. He was very apologetic for it. I said, look, we're not looking for, you know, any apologies. We just want to make sure that, you know, it's understood and known as to what this is and why we're there, and that we have the support of the tribe. So it was a good meeting, and they're committed to providing more information and knowledge as far as, you know, what this facility is, clarifying that this facility is not on tribal lands. And they have their own security force, and they've committed to working closely with you know, our security team and our operations team to, you know, make sure that they have a presence out there, and that we have names and faces and contact information if we run into any other incidences, that we can reach out to them quickly and get it resolved. So I thought it was a really good meeting. They were very appreciative of the follow up, and I'm hopeful that be a one and only incident for us. But I want to share that with you.
All right.
I do. And if there's no questions on that, just another real quick one that I want to share. I think some of you may be aware of this, but the good news in support of our Los Alamos Hills project, where we're trying to annex this small community and provide municipal water service. We've worked closely with the city. They've provided $3 million of ARPA funds to support that project. In the last month or so, the city reached out to us and said, hey, you know, we've identified some additional ARPA funds that we haven't allocated, $280,000, and we'd like to provide that to the project. So City Council approved that, so they've kicked in another $280,000 towards that project. So that's good news to us. We always knew the project was going to cost more than the $3 million. We should be ready to go out to bid fairly soon on that, so we'll see what the real costs are, but it's going to be very helpful. I told the city that we're very, very appreciative for, you know, scrubbing the coffers and, you know, finding those additional $280,000.
Very good. I appreciate that. Matt, anything this morning?
Good morning. I would just add, Joe covered our recharge efforts so far, but just wanted to let you know that the river is still flowing, and this morning we had about 5,900 GPM of river diversion still flowing into Grant. So that's good news. We're continuing to keep that facility running. So far, we're at about 3,300 acre feet for the year. So we're having a great year out at Grant. I think we're going to set a record this year for the last 12, 13 years. So that's it.
All right. Any questions on any of those items? With none, we will go to item 3, which is our consent calendar. Are there any members of the board that wish to pull an item off of consent for a separate discussion, separate vote, or conflict?
I would move the
seeing none. Moved by Director Cronus, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Takes us to our action calendar. Action item 4A is to approve and authorize a 2-year agreement with up to 3 1-year renewals for Bentag Pacific Incorporated in the full term, not to exceed a total of $2.4 million purchase supply of bulk liquid citric acid. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. So by way of background, on March 28th, the district received four proposals for the supply of citric acid with Brentag Pacific Incorporated of Santa Fe Springs, California, providing the lowest cost and highest scoring response. Citric acid is used at the district's water filtration plants and desalination facilities to clean filtration membranes. And regular cleaning helps reduce fouling, which can impact membrane lifespan and increase energy costs. The recommended supplier, Brentag, is a leading distributor of chemicals in the United States, and they consistently offer competitive pricing, on-time delivery, and technical support to the district. And they have been one of our leading suppliers over the last several years, and we have three additional chemical contracts with them. The evaluation of proposals submitted in response to the RFP included staff from Safety, Risk, and Emergency Management, Water Operations, and the Purchasing Departments. Selection criteria included company and personnel qualifications and experience, performance history, price, contractual exceptions, product compliance, insurance, and safety records. So over the past few years, the district has increased citric acid usage due to a change in source water from State Water Project to Colorado River Aqueduct supplied water, which resulted in increased water hardness and additional membrane cleaning. So our water operations staff has explored options to reduce citric acid usage and overall cost and change the frequency from weekly to biweekly, and also cleanings, and identified sulfuric acid as a potential chemical to replace citric acid. Sulfuric acid cannot be used to clean membranes, but it can be used to separate hardness and potentially reduce citric acid usage. The use of sulfuric acid may also eliminate and offset the district cost for another chemical, polyphosphate, which we spent close to $300,000 over the past 4 years. A maintenance project is planned to explore the alternative use of sulfuric acid in the upcoming fiscal year. I'm also pleased to report that the district received favorable pricing in response to this RFP, as citric acid manufacturing supply chains have stabilized over the last 12 months. And pricing's down over $7 per gallon from the existing price. We're projecting to save approximately $960,000 in this upcoming year. So under the proposed agreement, pricing will remain fixed for the first year of the recommended term, with subsequent adjustments based on supply increases to the industry, regulatory changes, or a consumer price index, and will be at the sole discretion of the district. So at this time, our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize a two-year agreement with up to 3 one-year renewals with Brentag Pacific in the full term not to exceed total of $2,040,000 for the supply and purchase of citric acid. I'd also like to let the board know that representatives with Brentag are here today in attendance at the meeting this morning.
Thank you very much for being here this morning, sir. Appreciate it very much.
With that, are there any questions I can answer at this time?
Any questions on this item? I'm glad to hear the prices are starting to come down a little bit, so good news.
And President Pauley, if I can, on that note that you just made, talking to staff, we're very pleased that the price of citric acid has come down significantly. This is part of the reason why, through our workshops with the board, when we're talking about our budget, we have recommended some limited use of our reserves, because there are a number of commodities that we've seen significant escalations during the pandemic. So I think rightfully so. I do believe that when some of these commodities readjust based on improved chain of supply, we hopefully will see other commodities come down. But I'm not going to necessarily keep my hope very high, but it is a good thing that we're seeing, at least with this chemical, it has come down. And I think it just validates the approach that we've presented to the board.
Very good. Do I have a motion on this item?
Moved
by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. Since he is in the citrus business, we'll let him second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Again, sir, thank you very much for attending today. Move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize agreement with Stantec Consulting Services Incorporated for $2.7 million. To design of the purified water replenishment conveyance pipelines and the Cottonwood recycled water pipeline projects for an appropriation of $3.2 million. Mr. Stone, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Thank you for the introduction. I'm excited to actually bring this one. This is a next step of one of the projects for our groundwater reliability plus. This is the conveyance pipelines to move the water from the pure water plant at San Jacinto Regional out to the recharge ponds. So the project is broken into four components. The first component being the purple trapezoid there. Those are brine ponds, which will store the waste stream from the advanced water plant, which is indicated as item two, right there north of the San Jacinto Reclamation Facility in red. We are going to reline as part of this project, the relining and the reusing of an existing 18-inch recycled water line to move the permeate water to the east. And then ultimately the second portion of this will be to construct a new pipeline from the Alessandro Ponds with a blending facility to bring recycled water and the permeate water together for ultimate groundwater augmentation at the newly constructed Mountain Avenue West. Well, I kind of covered my slide all one there, but it's the 18-inch pipe is approximately 3.5 miles long, 18,000 feet, and the rehabilitation will require a condition assessment so we can select the right technology for that renewal. The second piece is approximately 2.9 miles long, heading from the Alessandro Ponds down to the recharge basins. This will allow us to convey water along the river, and it will be actually in the Ramona Expressway at Mountain Avenue and Mountain Avenue. We've already begun talking to the cities about the requirements for Ramona Expressway, as we know this will be a difficult challenge due to the traffic in the area. The Cottonwood Recycle Water Pipeline, this will help us address some gaps that are out there. I talked about at the O&E committee, what's the reason this project is attached to the PWR conveyance project is because we are going to be creating new demand on the recycled water system for the flow that comes out of the San Jacinto Regional Plant. The line in blue is a pump-fed line to send water out to the distribution. And you'll notice to the lower left, the purple lines, those tanks, those pipelines are supported by reservoirs in the recycled water system. So one of the concerns staff has as we're looking forward to this is the stable operation of the existing pipeline, the north-south brown pipeline you can see there. So as we move forward with the design, we are also going to be utilizing the hydraulic model that's currently being updated as part of the recycled water master plan to run scenarios. We will design the pipeline, but ultimately prior to construction, we will have the model updated with all the current pipelines in it and be able to tell if we are going to have an issue in that north-south line. And that will be the trigger point to decide whether we build the pipeline or let it sit on the shelf for a little while. The consultant selection, we issued those in March of 2023. We received 3 of 11 proposals. In April 22nd, the selection panel was engineering and operations using this district standard form of selection. Ultimately, we selected Stantec, and this is a good segue. We actually have two representatives from Stantec here in the audience. They came to support the award today. If they want to stand up and give away.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it.
So. Stantec was the highest rated overall, showing a detailed understanding of the project. The team in particular that was selected has performed plenty of pipeline work for us in the past with outstanding performance, with a total fee of approximately $2.8 million. They have several sub-consultants as listed, covering all of the different facets of the project, looking at the pipeline rehabilitation. With that, they also have subcontractors to help dig up and enter the pipe, so that we can do remote monitoring and videoing of the pipe. And it's probably good to note that this pipe is non-operational at this time, so we're going to be bringing an asset back into the district service. So the scope for Stantec is managing the overall project, conducting the preliminary design and the validation, final design documents with contracts and services all the way through bidding. The estimate duration for the PWR pipelines is about a 12-month design. With 8 months allocated for Cottonwood. The fee breakdown is there in the table with the PWR pipelines taking the lion's share. So our recommendation today is to advance a contract with Stantec Consulting Services for the two pipeline projects in the amount of approximately $2.8 million, administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the project, and finally an appropriation of $3.25 million to fund the project through bid and award phase. And that brings me to the end of my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
Questions? Director Armstrong?
Just a question on how the project works with the line that goes to the recycled water holding ponds and then the new line that gets built. Does Advanced Treated Water actually, are we just going to be connecting two lines right there, or does it go into that?
So what happens at Alessandro Ponds, the new permeate pipeline, the existing 18-inch that we will be rehabilitating, goes to Alessandro. At Alessandro, we will have a turnout facility and a blending facility. So it will give us the flexibility to either blend that with our existing recycled water to send down for recharge at Mountain Avenue, or discharge the permeate directly into the Alessandro Ponds, which are a recycled water holding pond. So ultimately, we will be blending it either way. It's just the flexibility of where we're going to put it.
Thank you.
Can I ask a non-engineering question?
Yes, sir. So
on refurbishing the old pipeline, there's a technique that you do that so we don't have to dig in and bring it out of the ground. Is that my understanding? Or?
Yes, sir. We will actually dig holes and access the pipeline. The most typical rehabilitation method would be a slip lining. So they actually put a plastic liner in that's got cured epoxies on it. And we will push it through with hot water or steam, mm-hmm. and that extends, kind of unravels itself in the pipeline, and then the pressure of the water or the steam, mm-hmm. it pushes it out to the existing pipeline and activates the epoxy so that it adheres to the existing pipe.
How old is the pipeline that we're refurbishing?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can get you that.
But it's been there a while. Okay. So this is bringing an asset back into a useful category in a cost-effective manner.
That's the plan.
That's the point. Well, I figured. I'm just curious, though. So, all right, very good. Any other questions, or I'll look for a motion?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that is a 4-0 vote with Director Record absent. We'll move on to item C, which is to approve and authorize a contract with JAM Corporation for $1.9 million for the headquarters fire alarm system replacement project and additional appropriation at $2.7 million. Mr. Stone, are you doing this one too?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Good morning again. This is a replacement project for our headquarters fire alarm system. From the map, it's located here. I would like to recognize we have a member of JAM with us in the audience. He arrived
over here. There you go. All right. Thank you for being here this morning, sir.
Not without some to do. Apparently, several lanes of the 215
yes.
are closed.
Director Armstrong experienced that earlier.
So the project's located here at headquarters, and it's going to be to replace the existing fire alarm system. As the board is aware, the campus is in six separate buildings here, the O&M Operations Maintenance Center, the warehouse, maintenance shops, and the meter buildings were constructed in 1994, and the admin center was constructed in 1995. As such, the existing fire alarm system within the campus, they're not consistent, being built at different ages, and they're not interconnected, which presents some challenge. So our proposed improvements are to replace the fire alarm system with one unified system, and the components include installing the single fire alarm system, making sure the sound levels are appropriate, the synchronizing of the strobe lights, which as one of my staff and I were talking about today, you wouldn't think that would be a big deal, but per code it is, and we're going to replace the fire suppression system in the server room in the finance with we have a current non-water system, but with an updated non-water system to protect those two spaces. So the proposed improvements, there were several questions at the O&E committee meeting on what is $2 million buying us. So the existing fire sprinkler system is to remain in place. All of the strobes, as you can see over here on the wall, will be demoed and patched, restored to them. So we will also be getting new ceiling-mounted smoke and strobe detectors, come up to code. The ceiling makes them more visible across the spaces. As such, they all have to be wired back to the home base. So we are going to have to do work in the above the existing ceilings, running new cabling home runs back to the fire system control panels itself. There's several challenges involved in it. In order to keep operation and not disrupt staff, majority of the work will be done at night with it'll all be above employee workspaces, and we have to remove several sections of the T-bar ceiling so that we can put conduit supports in. So, summary of bids. We received bids on April 27th. We had two bidders. JAM Corporation was the lowest responsive bidder. With board award, we would like to issue a notice to proceed immediately and would look to complete the project in approximately a year. For support during construction, the designer of record is IMEG Corporation. We asked for a proposal for them to support us for the reviewing of all of the different components that will be submitted related to the fire alarm for conformance with the specifications. That was a negotiated fee of $93,000. So bringing us to our recommendation, we would like to recommend an execution of a contract with JAM Corporation in the amount of approximately $2 million, an execution of a contract with IMEG Corporation in the amount of $93,000, administrative award of ancillary contracts necessary to complete the project, and finally an additional appropriation of approximately $2.7 million, bringing our total estimated project cost to just about $2.9 million. And that brings me to the end of the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
If you don't mind, can I ask our guests to come up for a second from the company, from the contractor? Again, I'm just kind of curious. Since 1994, technology has changed a lot. Is this system going to have more bells and whistles than what we currently have, or is it just going to work better together?
You'll have a code compliant system that is for your entire campus as opposed to the disjointed system that you currently have now.
So this will bring us up to code.
Correct.
So it's not really a technology thing. It's just combining everything on here, so.
There are some technological changes. You have horns now. You will have a voice system, which is current code, so there's definitely an upgrade there. And you've got all of your suppression systems that are also being upgraded. I'm not sure what the agent is that puts out any potential fires that are in your server rooms, but you'll be better protected with them.
Very good. No, appreciate you being here today, so thank
you. I had to speak and everything. Wow.
Any other questions on this item? With that, I'll look for a motion. Motion by Director Armstrong. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Polly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That is a 4-0 vote with Director absent, bringing us up to fire code. So, very good. We will move on to item D, which is to approve and authorize an agreement with Lee and Rowe Incorporated for $1.6 million for the final design of the Matthews and Romoland Booster Station, an additional appropriation of $2 million. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. My name is Sam Valdez, Senior Civil Engineer in the Engineering Department. Here today to present staff's recommendation for award of contract with Lee and Rowe for final design of the Matthews and Romoland Booster Station. And I'd also like to recognize our guests from Lee and Rowe today, Maggie, project manager.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for being here. The project is located in the city of Menifee near the intersection of Ethanac Road and Antelope Road. It's just a couple miles from the headquarters here. The project includes a new dual booster station, Matthews and Romoland. The Matthews Booster Station will provide additional pumping capacity to support development within the 1720 Longview Pressure Zone, and the new Romoland Booster Station will replace the existing Romoland Booster Station, which is nearing the end of its useful life. The new Romoland Booster Station will also improve safety, accessibility, operability, and enhance the reliability within the 27 Paris Valley Pressure Zone. We have a picture of the existing Romoland Booster Station in the top right there. The proposed firm station capacities are 10,000 and 12,700 gallons per minute for the Matthews and Romoland station boosters, respectively. The two stations will be housed within a single block building. The project will also include emergency generator, new electrical service, yard piping improvements, site improvements, and once the new station is commissioned, we'll be demoing the existing Romoland booster station. In addition, we'll be leveraging this design effort to update the district's booster station design guidelines to the latest industry standards and district preferences. This design guidelines update will be done concurrent with the design effort and will serve to streamline future booster station designs. On February 21st, staff issued a request for proposals to six firms, and on March 28th, we received three proposals. A cross-sectional selection panel reviewed and scored the proposals in accordance with our typical evaluation criteria, as listed here. The top-ranking firm and best value was Lee & Rowe, based on their extensive pump station design experience, their excellent understanding of the project, and their expedited schedule. The final negotiated fee, including optional tasks, is approximately $1.6 million, as listed in the table here. Lee & Rowe's team includes a variety of subconsultants for supporting services. Many of these are local firms that are on the district's as-needed services list. And just to highlight a few for this particular project, we have acoustical analysis, architectural design, potholing, as well as cybersecurity. I'd also like to note that we have previously secured services from LSA to provide environmental consulting services for the project. Lee & Rowe's scope of work includes typical final design engineering services, including project management, field investigations, preparation of the construction bidding documents, including plans, specifications, and the engineer's estimate, as well as bid phase support services. And then their scope will also include an update of the design guidelines, as I mentioned previously. Should we receive the board's approval, we look to begin the project immediately and look to complete the final design in late next year. So with that, staff's recommendations are as follows. Award of contract with Lee & Rowe for the final design of the Matthews and Romoland booster station in the amount of approximately $1.6 million. Administrative award for ancillary contracts necessary to support the project. And additional appropriation of approximately $2 million to fund the project through the completion of the final design and bid award phases. So that concludes the presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No questions. I'll look for a thank you for the presentation. Look for a motion and a second. Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will move on to item E, which is to approve and ratify a contract, award of contract with Downey Construction Incorporated for $446,000. For the 7th Street Subsidence Pavement Emergency Repair and appropriation of $490,000. Mr. Chin, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley and also member of the board. I want also to recognize a guest. This is Jason Bent. He's a superintendent.
Thank you for coming today. Appreciate it yes. very much.
Okay. All right. So by way of background, this project is located in the city of San Jacinto on 7th Street, just west of Kirby. And what happened was at the end of March, the city notified district about a pavement subsidence next to our previously repaired sewer trench. Now, for safety reason, city decided to close down this portion of 7th Street. Now, since district warranty is on trench, And so that means this project is to repair the trench itself, which is approximately 350 linear feet of sewer trench subsidence, and replace the damaged pavement. This is an emergency project because city requested that we finish the work quickly so that they can reopen the 7th Street. Sorry about that. I should have skipped the... sorry about that. Okay. By way of background here and some chronology, in 08, this is when the San Jacinto Valley Interceptor was completed. And a couple of years later, the pavement and cracks, and even pavement and cracks, will start appearing on 7th Street. And so a few years later, in 2016, in coordination with the city, the district completed the pavement repair at select locations. And so you can see that these select locations show in red in the graphics down below, and then there were some areas that we need to monitor. Now, a few months ago, new subsidence appeared, and it's circled down there. You can see that is adjacent to an existing repair that was done previously. And so most likely due to the recent rain event, the water infiltrated into the backfill, which probably resulted in some kind of trench settlement. So one other thing that the operation did was they went out, inspected all the previously repaired area, and double-checked all the monitoring area, and there were no failures that were detected. So only the new area that was found. So a quick photo of the subsidence here. On the left, this is the westbound on 7th Street, and you can see the depression on the pavement. And also on the right, that's the eastbound, and you can see these stress cracks that appeared. So then due to the fact that the previous repair was good, the district decided to replicate this repair methodology. And so it was essentially installing three alternating layers of geogrid and an aggregate base. And then it covers the full width of the roadway section. So this way we can bridge the settle trench area. So very quickly, staff got on it, advertised the project, found a contractor, which is down in construction that we have, and then they were able to get the project started very quickly. Just real quick recap on the summary of the bids here. This project was advertised March 30th. It went to our on-call pipeline contractors and as a maintenance project. Now, we received five bids, and the bids were very close. And Downland Construction was the lowest responsive bidder in the amount of $446,000. And the following week, this project was awarded. Just real quick here, photos of the work that was being done. You see the street was excavated. It got down to the subgrade and prepared for the geogrids and the base. Also, too, this is the placement of the geogrid. Let's see on the bottom left. That's what it looks like. This matting was essentially laid on top of the prepared subgrade, and then the aggregate base was wetted and spreaded. And, of course, it was compacted as well, and the contractor did that for all three layers. This is the completion of the asphalt paving. It's looking really, really sharp. And finally, on May 4th, the 7th Street was reopened after the barricades were removed. And then a few days later, the 7th Street was restriped, and the project was deemed complete. One thing to note is we did not receive any change orders for the project. Also, during construction, we had to get our on-call consultants, that is Inland Foundation and COZAD, to support out there, and they were the same consultants that supported the previous repair project. So then for this morning, the recommendation is to approve and ratify the following. Execution of contracts with Downland Construction in the amount of $446,000. Execution of ancillary contracts with COZAL and Fox and Inland Foundation Engineering for the support services during construction. And finally, the appropriation of $490,000 for the project. That concludes my presentation. Open to
and questions. And thank you, William. I just wanted to add, this is a situation where we had to act very quickly, given the site conditions that the city closed the street. So we had to move quickly, bringing the contractor on board so we can make the immediate repairs. So thus, we're here in front of you asking for ratification of a contract that's already been executed. A couple of takeaways for me. One is the previous solution to address the subsidence that William referred to, using the GeoGrid, has been successful. We went out there, we looked at the previous sections, and those sections did not suffer any more subsidence or damage. This is a very deep sewer. I think in some cases it goes down to 20 to 30 feet below grade. What we've observed, and as you know, the chronology is whenever we had a very wet year in 2016 and now this year, we've seen the result of those wet years. And sections along 7th, if not most of the alignment, they don't have any curb and gutter. They don't have any storm drain facilities. So unfortunately, the water just finds its way down to the trench zone, and then they have the fines and silts move and cause the subsidence. So we're going to continue monitoring and making sure that we're doing everything we can. But I do, you know, just want to express my appreciation for the whole team to be able to just react quickly and work with the city to get this addressed. With that, we're here to answer any questions.
Any questions, Director Armstrong?
Well, to your point, do you foresee the city doing anything to make any improvements out there in terms of drainage or curbs and gutters?
You know, we're having those conversations. I don't think they have any immediate plans, but we're going to continue to advocate for them to do something out there.
Director, Director Corona?
What exactly does the GeoGrid do? So you put down your base material and you compact that, then you put the grid down, and then you put your road base down, and then the asphalt. So what does the grid do?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things you see, let me go back to the graphics here. You can see there are some voids in between. So what the intent is to lock in the aggregate base and so that it doesn't move. And in reality, it's create a stable structural sections, if you will. And there are obviously three layers of it. So that way, not only you intertie all these three layers together, it's a way to prevent further deterioration.
Does it keep the road base from going down or going out?
Let's see. Let me think about that.
I my understanding.
It looks like it kind of does both. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. My understanding, Dr. Corona, is what we're trying to do with the GeoGrid through the multiple layers. You're bridging the trench zone. So then, if there is any further settlement within the actual trench zone, you don't affect the pavement or the top section. So you're creating that bridge, that structural bridging, which has worked in the previous sections that we repaired.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, we had some questions on this at Option Engineering. I'm satisfied. I think we had to do it, and this looks like a good approach as a remedy. So I'll move it.
All right. Moved by Director Slauson.
I'll second.
Second by Director Corona. I'll just say it's always good. We have a great working relationship with Downing, and I appreciate them coming to help out in this matter. With that, I'll take a roll call vote.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you again for being here. Appreciate it very much. We will move to item F, which is to approve and authorize a project partnership agreement with the United States Army Corps of Engineers for the design construction of the South Paris Water Desalination Program in the amount not to exceed $8.3 million. Good morning.
Morning. President Pauley, members of the board. My name is Chris Carey. I'm a senior civil engineer in the engineering department. I'm happy to present today on the South Paris Program. Before I begin today's presentation, I'd just like to note that we have on the line with us today representatives from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Very good. Appreciate them joining us.
Yes, we have Ms. Patricia Kimura and Ms. Humanasar, which are the project manager and technical manager, respectively, for the program. Mm-hmm. All right. By way of background, the South Paris Water Supply Desalination Program was authorized by Section 219 of the Water Resources Development Act for federal funding participation through the United States Army Corps of Engineers. The program is generally located in and around the Paris South Groundwater Management Zone, which is outlined in blue on the figure on the right. The purpose of the South Paris program is to expand the district's brackish groundwater desalination program in partnership with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The district's existing desalination program facilities are illustrated in the graphic on the right. And phase one of the South Paris program implemented wells 94, 95, and 96, as well as related pipelines which support the Paris 2 desalter. Phase two of the program will implement similar improvements in support of continued expansion of the desalination program, which leverages local resources to promote long-term water supply reliability by reducing our area's reliance on imported water. To date, the program has been advanced in accordance with the terms of two separate design assistance and construction assistance agreements that we have in place with the Corps of Engineers. And these were executed in 2003 and 2014, respectively. These are also known as Project Partnership Agreements, or PPAs. In 2020, the Corps of Engineers published a new model agreement for Section 219 projects. This provides for a single consolidated design and construction assistance agreement, and it also streamlines the advancement of future program projects. However, the terms of the new model agreement are otherwise largely the same as the terms of the existing agreements that we have in place. However, in order to continue to advance the program with the Corps, a new PPA is required to be implemented, which conforms to the new model agreement. The first projects to be advanced under the new PPA will be the Brine Pipeline Maintenance Access Improvements Project and the Valley Boulevard Brackish Transmission Pipeline Project. And the Corps looks to advance the construction contract solicitation for the former project immediately following the execution of the proposed PPA and the latter project to follow in 2024. Under the terms of the PPA, the Corps would continue to advance the design and construction of program components, and EMWD would continue to contribute a 25% matching share of the total program cost. This is inclusive of the items that we have listed there on the slide on the right. The district would also assume responsibility of the ownership of the facilities. Our original congressional authorization of $25 million was also recently amended to $50 million. And when combined with the district's associated matching share, this brings the total estimated capacity of the program to approximately $67 million. The district's matching share obligation associated with the Phase 2 program will not exceed approximately $8.3 million, which is shown here in the table right in the middle. And lastly, I'd like to note that no appropriation is requested at this time. However, as additional federal funds become appropriated toward the program, staff would return to the board to request appropriations for the district's associated matching shares. So our recommendation today is to approve and authorize execution of the Project Partnership Agreement with the United States Army Corps of Engineers for the South Paris Program in an amount not to exceed approximately $8.3 million. And I would be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Chris. President Paul, if I could just wanted to add a couple of things, and I know the L.A. District team is on the line. I just wanted to express my appreciation to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for being such an incredible partner over the last two decades, frankly, in advancing numerous elements of this important program. And we look forward to having this new agreement in place so that we can, as Chris mentioned, advance construction of the brine line improvements, which we've received appropriation for from the Army Corps. Finally, I just wanted to add that the L.A. District Commander, Colonel Balton, and her team will be coming out to have an in-person signing ceremony for this new agreement in early July. So we're looking forward to have her come out and visit us and be able to hopefully execute this agreement in early July. With that, Chris and I and others happy to answer any questions.
I'd just like to note, and chiming in with Director Armstrong's comment earlier this morning, this again is part of why we go back to D.C. and build these relationships and I just, what a great job this district does on doing that, because when you see programs like this, it's because of that hard work over the years. So with that, I'd like to move the item.
I'll move the item.
Second that by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that moves 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you very much. Good presentation. Thank you to our guests on the phone. We will go to item G, which is to adopt a proposed resolution amending EMWD's administrative code, reducing the conservation factor for non-residential, non-functional turf.
Correct.
You waited patiently to be the last one today, so
see welcome. The best for last, hopefully. All right, good morning, President Pauly and board members. Today I'll be bringing to you to change our administrative code, as mentioned, to permanently place the ban on the irrigation of non-functional turf at non-residential properties. So this started off as part of the emergency regulations enacted by the State Water Resources Control Board back June of 2022. It applies to all CI properties, including HOAs. It does continue to allow the irrigation of turf that has trees and non-perennial plantings on the same valves. It does exclude the residential properties, including those within HOAs. It also includes parks, sports fields, and other turf used for recreation and community events. It also excludes landscapes irrigated with recycled water. It also excludes turf that is certified as low water use species with low water use irrigation placed in it. So what EMWD's approach was, we did a lot of extensive outreach to our CII customers, including direct mailings, emails, workshops, presentations at city council meetings, one-on-one outreach. We also did flyer distribution with the Chamber of Commerce, and we have a dedicated website for this. And we also asked for a call to action, shutting off irrigation to all the eligible non-functional turf areas, taking advantage of our rebate programs to permanently replace that non-functional turf. Some of our enforcement actions were to change from 70% ET factor to a 50% ET factor. And so customers that exceed the budget will be penalized through our tier structure. There is an online waiver process, and to date we've gotten about 150 waiver requests, and these are basically saying that they have functional turf at their property. And so we would put them back to that 0.7 factor, the 70% factor. The permanent change that we're calling for today, the State Water Board is actually proposing to extend their emergency regulation that was supposed to expire at the end of this month. But this is kind of making it EMWD's own thing also. It would permanently reassign that 50% ET factor to all of our CII customers. This was included in our Prop 218 notice. Currently, we are working with UC Riverside on a study about upfront funding for assistance for these kind of program or for a replacement of non-functional turf. Also, the implementation plan includes additional assistance for the board's consideration, which tomorrow will come to Planning Committee, and then on the 21st, I'll be bringing back. And then it includes expanding our Landscapes for Living program to CII customers and also increasing some of our rebate programs. And with that, my recommendation is to approve adopt the proposed resolution to the amending EMW's administrative code, reducing the conservation factor for non-residential, non-functional turf. And I'm happy to answer any questions on the red line or anything else you may have.
Questions? Director Armstrong.
You mentioned the waivers that you have received. Do we, verify those, or is it the process of waiver, we just accept it?
We do, part of it we take to their face. We also look at the aerial imagery of it to assess what kind of an area that they're saying. And if we need to, we can go out in the field. But for the most part, they've been pretty obvious ones that we've done.
And then are you aware of any of our other peer agencies here in Riverside that are going to this level?
Not at this time, but there is state legislation being proposed that would require this. So if adopted, they would have to.
I was just curious. I think this is real leadership, again, on Eastern's part, and I think it's the right thing and appropriate. And I would hope that others would follow it. Thank you.
I hope to.
Any other questions on this item? And just to clarify this, if the non-functional turf is connected to a recycled water system, this does not apply?
Correct. It does not apply.
Very good. That, I'll accept the motion. I'd like to make the motion, Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Let's do the receive and file, and then we'll probably take a break before the calendar. So on the receive and file, do I have a Motion to receive and file various reports. Director Armstrong. Second. Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
This is 4-0. Director record absence. Let's take about a 7 or 8 minute break before doing our calendar review. We'll reconvene. And we are at our board calendar and board reports. So, Ms. Martinez, the floor is yours.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board.
Good morning.
I have a few events for your consideration this morning. The first one being the Riverside County Water Task Force, which is virtual, and that takes place on Friday, June 16th. Followed by the Hemet San Jacinto Chamber of Commerce Gala Dinner in San Jacinto on Friday, June 30th. We have the BIA Southern California Water Conference in Ontario on Friday, August 11th. And on Wednesday, August 23rd through the 24th, is the Urban Water Institute's 30th Annual Water Conference, which takes place at Mission Bay in San Diego. Moving on to page 2 is the board members' master calendar for the next few weeks. If you could please review and provide any necessary updates, that would be great. Moving on to page 3, we have the upcoming scheduled events, and these events also have the flyers attached at the back of your packet with additional details, but we have two that take place on Thursday, June 15th. The first one is the Temecula Valley Chamber Southwest Regional Economic Forecast in Temecula. And we also have, on the same day, the City of Murrieta State of the City Address in Murrieta. And on Thursday, June 29th, we have the Western Riverside Council of Governments General Assembly and Leadership in Temecula. In the middle of the page, we have our unscheduled board meetings for the next 3 months, as well as the board committee meetings, all on schedule. And moving on to page 4, we have our joint interagency meetings, and those for the next 3 months are also on schedule. We have no out-of-office, and for the district office holiday schedule, we'll be closed. District offices will be closed on July 4th in observance of the holiday. And there are no questions. That concludes my report.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We will go to directors' activities and reports, and we will start Director Armstrong.
I attended the Department of Water Resources update on the desalination resource management strategy, and they pretty much walked through that whole report. It was very informative. The final report will come out sometime this summer. The D.C. legislative trip, already mentioned that, and again, I just think it was a fantastic job, and Director Pauly did a fantastic job as well. It definitely has some connections and some lore of Director Pauly back there that's shared. And maybe one of the highlights was actually we had dinner with Congressman Issa, and we got to learn and taste some really good Lebanese food, and with Joe leading the way and them sharing and giving us history. It was really good.
We were with experts.
We were, yes. Good update with our general manager, and then had the Diamond Valley Lake Memorandum of Intent Committee meeting. All the stakeholders that are part of that gave updates what's happening with their agencies. Met did provide an update. They talked about water supply and also the status of Diamond Valley Lake and it being filled by the end of the year. Also, some designs being completed for a new bike trail along the front of, I guess it's the front of the lake, along Winchester and the dam, connecting Diamond Valley and Lake Skinner Campground. And also a good update from the Western Science Center as well, and our partnership with them. But they really have some neat exhibits going on this summer for, you know, really educational things. And I think the water park is open now too. So it's a good meeting. Those are my updates.
Director Corona.
Okay. So since my election to LAFCO, we're now going to start doing
meetings with Eastern staff to discuss items that may be important to Eastern, and so we had our first meeting this last month, and then statement on accounting standards review interview. Now that was, I guess, there's this auditor guy that comes in and asks me about 10 questions and make sure there's no graft and corruption going on at Eastern Municipal Water District. Okay, the commission meeting itself, we discussed multiple service reviews and a few employee issues. We did have a public speaker who came in and was not happy with Steve Corona being on the LAFCO commission, and Eastern supposedly was going to send recycled water to San Diego County, but anyway, I responded to that. The monthly meeting with general manager, of course, was good. Murrieta Temecula group meeting, we had got a presentation from the Loma Linda University hospital administrator and talking about the shortage of nurses in Southern California. And the Rancho EMWD ad hoc committee was yesterday, and that was a good meeting also. That's all I have.
Very good. I attended the IE Works board meeting, which was kind of standard fare, although I would like to say I think we're getting closer to getting an agreement with IE Works of getting an intern person placed at Eastern, so I look forward to that. EMWD Western meeting was covered a lot of MET issues and things, and again, Joe just does a great job on that. We got kind of an update from Craig Miller on the next evolution of Save Our Water Task Force and where that's going. Hammond San Jacinto discussion luncheon I went to, mainly because Juan Perez, who's done a great deal for this district, was the featured speaker, and I let the group know that through Juan and the district, that a lot of our ARPA money and projects that are coming that are very beneficial to the ratepayers of the district. So that was a good meeting. IE Works Strategic Officers Planning Meeting, got to hear a lot of what's new things happening in that realm. As we've discussed, the D.C. legislative meetings were great. And it's not just meeting with the members of Congress, but the working relationships we have with the federal agencies, and it is very important, and as we just showed, that is paying off. I love the fact that we can bring some of our ratepayers, federal taxpayer money back to this district to do good infrastructure projects, and the fact that we're being very successful at it. So I had a good meeting with Laura Namora on some things going on in HR and other things, parts of the district on the administrative side, which I always appreciate. And then WRCOG meeting the Monday, we did a call was there, and Michael from Western, and we did a water update to the whole WRCOG board of what's going on with, with the fact that we now finally, for the first time, have some excess water in the years, and things where the water districts are planning to do with it, et cetera. So that is always good. I like to participate in WRCOG and at least quarterly have water updates for them, because you'd be surprised the number of council members that walk up to me afterwards and go, that is really helpful, because it's not something we don't know a lot about. You guys do an absolutely great job of disseminating information. So that was good. Director Slauson.
Certainly. Yeah, we had our joint meeting with Western on the 18th and discussed issues that are of common interest. And, yes, Save Our Water Task Force seems to be taking off, so that's a good thing. Attended the chamber breakfast meeting, and the presenter was Riverside University Health System Behavioral Science Director. And it was quite enlightening. It was an interesting meeting, breakfast. Had our monthly update with the general manager, had a little more detail on some of the items that the district is pursuing or facing. I also attended a chamber's director meeting on the 31st, and the board, I'm in the board there, and we discussed and decided to have a create a government affairs committee that will review legislation, and I'll try to make sure that things of interest, not only for business, but also for government, which includes us, are represented. And I was approached by Corrine Awad from Riverside University Health System, and we have a meeting scheduled for me to tour their facility on the 29th to discuss a conservation or demonstration garden as part of their, they have a large area that they want to improve, and they want us to participate. And SOPI yesterday, we had the major item was just approval of a contract with Consors and Conway to do the regulatory support for the Basin Monitoring Program Task Force and strategic and regulatory support for the Middle Santa Ana River Pathogen TMDL Task Force, and to provide strategic and regulatory support for the Emerging Constituents Program Task Force. We approved a 4% merit pool and a 4.6 COLA increase, and had a presentation by Rachel Gray, formerly of EMWD, on the Integrated Climate Adaptation and Resilience Program, and seeking of a grant. That's it.
Very good. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items? I had one. I just wanted to recognize, as many of you know, that Jennifer Donnelly has left Eastern to go on to her kind of lifelong dream of working in the Foreign Service. And I just wanted to take a moment to recognize she was excellent in dealing with the board and travel. And I don't know about the rest of you, but sometimes keeping me organized can be a challenge. And she just did a fantastic job. So I just wanted to mention that it is great for me to see people at a certain stage of life go on to do their kind of personal passion in life. But I just want to thank her for the service here at Eastern, and that was fantastic. And I know Sheila, she's going to be hard to replace, but I'm sure we will get a person who does just as well at keeping me and others organized. So
we're on the hunt.
All right. Just wanted to mention that and thank her for that. If I could ask our legal counsel if there is a need for closed session.
Is there a need for closed session?
Yes, sir. Yes, we have a closed session.
We have two items on for closed session.
Very good. With that, why don't we take a couple minutes and switch over to closed session mode? We're going to do that in here, Joe?
Yes, we are.
Okay, very good. Okay, we're ready to go? Okay, we are back in open session. May I get the legal counsel to give us a report out of closed session?
Certainly. Board met in closed session to discuss two items. The first one was undisclosed potential litigation. Board received a report from district counsel and staff regarding that matter. No reportable action took place. The board also met in closed session for a performance evaluation of the general manager. After receiving a report, the board decided to reconvene that item back into public session for the purposes of taking action. And with that, that concludes my report.
Very good. With that, I would like to make a motion to award the general manager the 10% performance award pursuant to his contract.
I'll second that.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Thank you.
With that, we have concluded the business of the day. We will stand adjourned until June 21st.